May the root of my mouth and the thought of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. For those of you who know something about the themes of the church here, you may be surprised to have a sermon on Ecclesiastes in the middle of Easter time. Well, I had invited a guest preacher for today, and he chose the readings. A few weeks ago, he told me that he might not be able to make it, but he'll let me know at short notice. I told him that would be fine. If he could not make it, well, I would use the same readings as a basis for my sermon. So it turns out he did inform me that he could not make it, so now you'll get a sermon about the book of Ecclesiastes. Sermons on the book of Ecclesiastes are not that common. There's only one Sunday in the lectionary across its three-year cycle where reading from Ecclesiastes is a possible alternative reading. I think in my time here, I've only used it for Evensong once as a reading there, but not on the Sunday morning. But of course, Ecclesiastes chapter 3 is a favorite funeral reading. It goes, "There's a time for everything, and a season for every activity under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to heal." Well, and so it goes on. Previously, before I came here, I was in Cambridge in the North Island. And there, that church, several funerals were held each month. And the pages for this reading, Ecclesiastes chapter 3, were really worn in the pulpit Bible. But there's far more to Ecclesiastes than verses from chapter 3. The book of Ecclesiastes contains the lessons of a wisdom teacher. It is part of the wisdom tradition and part of a biblical discussion, both on what it means to live a good life and even deeper about the meaning of life. The book, in a sense, is a correction of or an argument with some of the more clear-cut statements in other wisdom books of the Bible. In the book of Proverbs, for example, we find some of those more clear-cut sayings. Whoever pursues righteousness and love finds life, prosperity, and honor. This one proverb. Another, the light of the righteous shines brightly, but the lamp of the wicked is snuffed out. Or, the righteous eat to their heart's content, but the stomach of the wicked goes hungry. Or, be sure of this, the wicked will not go unpunished, but those who are righteous will go free. When the storm has swept by, the wicked are gone, but the righteous stand firm forever. There are many more of those proverbs. And if you hear just those proverbs, you would think that the book of Proverbs as a whole has a very one-sided view that being righteous results in good life, being wicked results in misery. That's a sort of strict consequences follow deeds view of the world. And that is something that to an extent is helpful and has to be learned. And particularly it has to be learned by children. So practicing a musical instrument means getting some sweets later. That's the consequence of doing it. Or hitting your brother lands you some time out. Or unloading the dishwasher makes mum far more disposed to let you play on the computer. Or another one, not doing your homework results in additional work at school. And generally, students learn that studying for a test gets you better grades. And spending your pocket money on sweets now means you can never buy that toy you really wanted later on. It's really important for children to learn those lessons. Some of the consequences are enforced by parents or teachers. Others are just how the world works. But at some point, children will learn that there's not always a direct correlation between deeds and consequences. It's similar in the book of Proverbs. There are other verses that indicate that the world is a bit more complex. Yes, there are the basic rules about good living, but in the real world, there's a lot more nuance. For example, it says a poor man's field may produce abundant food, but injustice sweeps it away. Clearly here, there's more to it than being righteous. And there's also this thing about justice and injustice, which affects the world. Or another proverb says, it is not fitting for a fool to live in luxury. How much worse for a slave to rule over a princess? So the book of Proverbs sees something wrong in that situation, but it acknowledges that those situations actually do happen. In our own day, that realization also seems to be coming more prevalent, maybe. A few years ago, in New Zealand, many people thought that hard work would make you better off. Now, in a recent study, a majority of New Zealanders said that it's not that simple. Hard work doesn't always enable you to be successful. There are other barriers there. Well, that's probably because there has been a change in New Zealand society, which does mean that hard work doesn't get you ahead as easily. But through that reality, that has always been there, what always has been there has also become more obvious. And so it may have also been in ancient Israel. In different times, the old certainties that were clearly a decent advice were not as much applicable in all cases, and maybe even a bit naive. So the book of Ecclesiastes clearly acknowledges this teaching tradition, this wisdom tradition, which seeks to encourage people to act rightly. But it highlights that life is not that simple, that things may turn out quite differently in the real world. One of the more well-known sayings from Ecclesiastes is, the race is not to the swift or the battle to the strong, nor does food come to the wise or wealth to the brilliant or favor to the learned, but time and chance happen to them all. By that, it seems to imply that clearly success in this life is not always based on merit, nor do we always advance in progress. Life is a lot more complicated and complex, and often there's some chance in it. If God orders this world, then it is not by simplistic rules where one thing results in another. So the complexity of this world is such that even with our most advanced research, we can never fully comprehend it. This is also clearly conveyed in today's Bible passage that we read from the book of Ecclesiastes. Yes, the teacher knows the general observation, said, although a wicked man commits 100 crimes and still lives a long time, I know that it will go better with God-fearing men who are reverent before God. Yet because the wicked do not fear God, it will not go well with them, and their days will not lengthen like a shadow. So it's clear here that the teacher knows that in the short term, wickedness and greed often seem to pay off, but in the long run, there's a more tendency for one's misdeeds to catch up with someone. But that's still not the full story, for he continues to say, there's something else meaningless that occurs on earth. Righteous men who get what the wicked deserve, and wicked men who get what the righteous deserve. So the old rules don't always apply. And we ourselves see it time and again. And we know that it is not right, but that it happens. Life is not simple, and it certainly ain't fair. And so what lessons does Ecclesiastes draw from that observation? I think he spells out two. First, enjoyment of life. He advises that rather than a continual striving, you should have contentment and an appreciation for the good things in life, and that can result in greater happiness. That's a lesson we can learn, and actually that's in line with the biblical focus on thankfulness. However, taking this enjoyment too far is also dangerous. That brings us to hedonism or possibly Epicureanism. And as many have found out, those extremes also do not bring happiness. The teacher in Ecclesiastes in the following chapter describes this enjoyment a bit more fully. You go eat your bread with gladness and drink your wine with a joyful heart, for it is now that God favors what you do. Always be clothed in white and always anoint your head with oil. Enjoy life with your wife, whom you love, all the days of this meaningless life that God has given you under the sun. Well, clearly, this advice was aimed at men, particularly young men, but you get the overall gist of it. The other lesson is that we can never be fully wise or fully understand God. The world, and even so more God's ways, will always be a mystery. We can try and understand, but never fully will. Despite that, wisdom is still better than folly, and fearing God and his commandments better than turning away from God. So those are the two pieces of advice, I think, that we get out of this chapter in particular. Overall, however, the advice seems to be summed up by accept that life isn't fair, enjoy life as much as you can, and be content with the simple things in life. Do good as much as you can, and keep God's commandments, and have a reverence for God. In our modern day, that advice might look something like a laid-back, middle-class family life, not too ambitious, a cultural Christian enjoying good music, good food, good wine, occasionally indulging in chocolate and a bit of exercise and going on nature walks, and have a bit of volunteering thrown in as well for social cohesion. Well, that's all fine and good, but what happens when sickness strikes, when the partner has grown apart, when the children take a concerning course, when unemployment strikes, when the world seems to have gone crazy? Is it then enough to enjoy this meaningless life, or do we look for meaning then? Clearly, Ecclesiastes' advice does not have the last word in the Bible. Rather, this advice makes clear the limits for our search for wisdom and the restrictions of our pursuit of happiness. We can take it no further than a somewhat hollow enjoyment of our current life. That's as fine as far as it goes, but clearly it's not satisfactory and in no way the full answer. So what's the answer to our search for meaning, our quest for a fulfilled life? The answer that the Bible gives is the same that we were taught in Sunday school, Jesus. Our guest preacher wisely chose Revelation 21 as a response to Ecclesiastes, because this passage makes quite clear that there's an ultimate purpose and meaning to this life, namely a relationship with God, so that in the end we are in the immediate presence of God. God will live with his people, and God will be with them and be their God. God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain. That is the ultimate purpose and meaning of life, being in God's presence. Righteousness, therefore, is not so much to achieve a good life here, nor probably, I would say, even to get a reward in heaven, but rather so that we become the people that God intended us to be and can be in God's presence. Note that our Bible passage also talks about the wicked, namely the cowardly, the unbelieving, the vile, the murderers, the sexually immoral, those who practice magic arts, the idolaters, and all liars. Well, they will not be in the presence of God. They are far away from God. John, in his vision, even describes it as a fiery lake of burning sulfur, a second death. Now, some may say that God who condemns or excludes some people is a cruel God, but it would be even more cruel for God to force people into his presence when they directly choose to reject God. After all, those who do not become reconciled to God cannot endure the presence of God. Of course, the Bible tells us that no one is righteous by their own efforts. We all have sinned and have fallen short of the glory of God. It is through Jesus Christ that we are made righteous. Jesus has carried our sins and reconciled us to God. And by accepting God's forgiveness through Jesus, we acknowledge our own sin and are made ready for righteousness. That involves a change process in us, so that in the end we are ready to be in God's presence, so that God's presence will indeed be healing and joyful for us. For the joy of being in God's presence surpasses all the other joys in this life, even eating our bread with gladness and drinking our wine with a joyful heart. But note how, nevertheless, even Ecclesiastes probably unintentionally here, but nevertheless, how Ecclesiastes points forward to Jesus by mentioning bread and wine as something in the here and now, something that we as Christians know points forward to the banquet in God's presence and points backwards to our salvation through Jesus' death on the cross. So overall, the question of being righteous or wicked is not so much about being successful here and now, but rather about being the person God intended us to be and allowing God through Jesus to prepare us for being in the presence of God. And then we will be satisfied and a joy unending will fill our hearts.